Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, this is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley, bringing the best of my Times radio show. It is Politics Without the Boring Bits, Monday to Friday, 10 till 1. And we are in Liverpool for the Labour Party conference. A cracking podcast coming up to you today. Something for everyone. We take a look back on our focus groups and how they've changed their views on Keir Starmer. What do they say about him 3 years ago? What do they say about him now? This time last year, I sat down with Angela Rayner. She told me that she might like to swap deputy PMQs for doing shots with Therese Coffey. Well, for the last year, I've been trying to arrange cocktails with Angela Rayner, and it finally happened. At the Spectator Party, I had an espresso martini with Angela Rayner, deputy leader of the Labour Party, and Wes Streeting, Shadow Health Secretary, who was very keen to stress everything in moderation. That's coming up in just a moment. But first, as we always do, it's time for the Columnist Panel.
The Columnists on Times Radio.
Yeah, joining me live on the Times Radio stand here in Liverpool, Times columnist Rachel Sylvester.
Hi,
nice,
Matt.
Nice to see you. And Patrick McGuire.
Hello.
What are you reading there, Patrick?
It is my complimentary copy of The Morning Star.
And what are you learning?
Sorry, I hope that doesn't get me sacked, if anyone...
I think it's good to be across a broad range.
No. Look, it's it's coverage of the trade union movement. It's very good. I now know that Plaid Cymru's trade union branch opposes Freeport, so there you go. you don't get that in any other daily newspaper.
More on that as we get it. If there's anyone still listening, Rachel, what are you expecting from the conference today?
It's so different, the atmosphere, to last week, isn't it? It's just absolutely buzzing with businesses, lobbyists. We're in the exhibition hall, absolutely jam-packed, unlike last week where it seemed to be all Tory stands. But I think what's interesting is whether Labour can give a positive pitch. So there's so much caution around the party. Rachel Reeves, her whole purpose is to say we can be trusted on the economy. But they still haven't really given a convincing pitch about why people should change to them rather than changing from the Tories. I was in a focus group a couple of weeks ago for the Health Commission, and at the end they said, what do you think of Keir Starmer? And everyone, three people unprompted, said, well, they can't be any worse than the current lot. But none of them had a kind of clear idea of what's the positive reason to vote Labour. So I think that's the job for this week, really.
And Patrick, you're very plugged in with Team Starmer. Are they all, is everyone on board with the ultra cautious plan? You know, don't start on the horses, don't do anything too lively, don't put a target on your back for the Tories. Or are there some voices who are saying, look, to seal that deal, to lock in that 20-point lead, we need to be bolder and actually just a bit more cheerful?
Well, look, the answer to that question is yes, in some respects, which is why we saw, in the month before this conference, Keir Starmer come out and make a positive offer on migration. That's not a value judgment on the policy. That's just to say he came out and defined himself, his own migration policy, despite the risks and the backlash, ditto his stance on Europe. So look, there is certainly an awareness at the very top of the Labour Party that they need to set out their own policies on contentious areas. You also saw a little bit of that, not sure it was terribly well executed, from Rachel Reeves this morning. In my column a couple of weeks ago, I said Rachel Reeves was going to use this conference to start making quite a careful argument about borrowing to invest in key infrastructure projects, helping businesses have the certainty to make their own investments by using government borrowing to invest in those sorts of projects too. She was on the media round this morning making that argument, but you could tell that it wasn't something she was entirely comfortable doing, or that she knew that she couldn't go as far as she would like, perhaps.
It was really interesting. I thought that the back and forth with Stig Abel on Breakfast, where he would say, so these are your fiscal rules. You want debt to be falling by the end of the parliament, but you might borrow at the beginning of the parliament on the expectation that debt overall would still work. And she just wouldn't... That was what she was saying, but she didn't quite want to say it, presumably because she knows as soon as she does, the Tories will be straight out saying, yep, typical Labour, they're always borrowing money.
Or it means actually her fiscal rules in government will be a little bit less prescriptive than the one she's talking about now. Neither scenario politically is something the opposition want to risk, because as you say, the Tories then say, look, same old Labour, and we'll attack them in very familiar terms.
Yeah.
And I think the interesting thing is that the Labour's kind of historic Achilles heel, hasn't it, has been that the not having a reputation for economic competence, being people fearing that they can't be trusted with your money. And the Liz Truss mini budget completely flipped the tables on that and undermined the Conservatives' reputation, yeah, on that. So there is an opportunity here for Labour, but they are absolutely fixated on that sense of the importance of economic competence, and that, and I think it is a absolutely necessary prerequisite for victory, but it probably isn't enough for the landslide that they're hoping for. And the interesting thing in terms of this sort of borrowing argument is, how do you define value? So is it, you know, if you think about health or education, you may spend something in the short term, early years education, there's an upfront cost, but the benefits over 20, 30 years, even 10 years, yeah, are absolutely multiple of the investment.
Yeah, and I was on a panel with Liz Kendall, the Shadow Working Pensions Secretary, yesterday, and she made quite an interesting point, which was we should think about the care sector as sort of key critical national infrastructure in the same way that you do HS2. And sort of some eyebrows went up in the audience, but she said, well, look, it unlocks economic potential in the same way that a new transport link does. Women who wouldn't otherwise have been able to go to work can go to work. People who might have been sucked up in the care system might be able to be supported into work, and she was drawing comparisons with Australia and the US. So it's, you know, there are lots of very interesting discussions going on.
Actually, when I interviewed Rachel Reeves a few months ago, she made exactly the same point about childcare. And she was saying, you know, male chancellors love to put on a hard hat and a high-vis jacket and go to some sort of building site, talk about railways and planes, trains and automobiles. But actually, as a female chancellor, she would hope to invest in what she called soft infrastructure, yeah, which is things like childcare, which is about getting women back into the workplace.
And would probably involve a big outlay, you know, however many billion a year, disso childcare. But the challenge for Labour is moving on from that discussion, as Rachel Reeves tried to this morning, to saying, look, that is an investment that can generate much more economic growth. But I'm not sure they've nailed that yet.
And actually, Keir Starmer and Wes Streeter were making the same point yesterday about waiting lists. You know, usually they say the money from non-DOMS, if they can get to get staff to work at weekends to try and bring down the waiting list. So there's 7 million people on waiting lists. And actually, if they got their operations, they got better, they could be back in the workforce,
yeah,
some of them. And that generates growth as well. So it's interesting that they are taking what would sometimes be seen as slightly soft labour issues, childcare, the care system, the NHS, and turning it into a sort of hard-headed economic argument that if people are better, they can get into work and boost the economy.
Yeah,
it's an interesting way of framing it.
But also the question is, and this is a genuine question, I don't know the answer, is, you know, the growth mission of Keir Starmer's 5 missions that can trip off everybody's tongue is couched in quite academic, abstract terms. You know, the highest sustained growth in the G7. You compare that to the language Keir Starmer was using on the doorsteps with our Sarwar and Rutherglen, which was all about making work pay, the dignity of work, and you see that they're... Once there is a big gap between
there's a bit,
the tangible and the...
Nobody's talking about the missions anymore, are they? They've slightly disappeared. Now, I want to talk to you about deepfakes, because online yesterday there was some audio circulating which appeared to be Keir Starmer swearing at some of his staffers. And then also him talking about how much he hates the city of Liverpool. Now, we're not going to play it, because then we're sort of adding to the credibility of it, because it is a fake, and I was talking to someone only last night in the Labour Party, so we're actually really worried about this, because it just goes to show that actually it was really convincing. It did sound exactly like somebody just recorded something on their phone of Keir Starmer. And it could potentially be a big problem in an election campaign, Patrick.
Yes, it definitely could. The election that's just happened in Slovakia, where a pro-Kremlin candidate won, was dominated by deepfakes and lots of the campaign. Some people say that's from the campaign. I don't know enough about Slovakian politics, but it's interesting that that discussion is happening in an election with a contentious result. What this story reminds me of, though, is when Armando Iannucci and Chris Morris and Steve Coogan were making On the Hour in the early 90s, they did something almost identical to this, which was Steve Coogan, obviously an amazing impressionist, did a pitch-perfect impression of Neil Kinnock in the Midland Hotel in Manchester, berating a waiter for not giving him the right wine. And they played it down the line to a tabloid newspaper and very nearly sold it to them because Steve Coogan's impression of Neil Kinnock was so impressive. So look, this isn't new, but that you don't need to engage Steve Coogan to do this.
Yeah.
Makes it very dangerous.
It's so much more sophisticated because now they can do it with video as well as audio. And actually, it goes beyond individual party politics. I thought it was really interesting. Tom Tugendhat last night tweeted that this was something really worrying and dangerous and had to be resisted because actually trust in politics is much bigger than any one party.
And it's interesting because I think actually some platforms then took it down after, you know, being contacted by the Labour Party. But I was thinking, once it ends up in WhatsApp...
Exactly.
And, you know, and actually, were it to be a clip of Keir Starmer apparently being rude about Liverpool, it pinging around WhatsApp groups in Liverpool, have you seen this? And there's no way of controlling that. There's no... Can you take that down?
And also, if it becomes subterranean, that you don't, it doesn't even really hit the headlines. It's sort of pinging around at a very low level.
Yeah.
It's really subversive.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what... hopefully we won't see any more of it, but I suspect that we will, just because, like you were saying, Patrick, the technology is there that almost anyone can put together amazing quality deepfakes.
We don't know who did this.
I don't think so.
But imagine if you had a sort of foreign power trying to manipulate an election. It's not beyond the realms of possibility, is it?
Absolutely.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, Matt Chorley on Times Radio.
Very good morning to you. It's Matt Chorley coming to you from the Labour Party conference in Liverpool, still joined by Rachel Sylvester and Patrick Maguire. And we've just been joined by the journalist Paul Mason as well from the New European. Morning, Paul.
How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Good to have you. We've just talked about deepfakes. And you've been a journalist a long time, Paul. It's hard, isn't it, when you see something on social media? The Keir Starmer one is very convincing, and it could become a big part of
if
an
you
election.
Know Keir Starmer, it's not that convincing.
Well, that's true.
I thought it was a kind of spitting image caricature. But listen, I got to see it because of this rancid group called O'Keeser, Corbyn Inspired, the people who supported that horrible documentary about Jeremy and who are trying to unseat Keir Starmer. They put it around yesterday, and I've looked on their Twitter account this morning. It says that after it was debunked, this voice recording has been analysed and appears to be authentic, not AI generated as they want you to believe. There must be Keir Starmer must be investigated thoroughly. I mean, there are a section of people who are down the rabbit hole. Thankfully, they're not here. I can tell you, they're not here at all. And even where they were, which was the World Transformed Festival, outside, you know, a kilometre away, the people organising that are pretty dismayed about the antics of some of the people. We're going to talk about Palestine, I think, in a minute, Israel. But there is a nutty left. It's completely marginalised here now in Labour.
And of all the achievements of Keir Starmer over the last three and a bit years since he became leader, I mean, lots of people in the Labour Party thought there was probably a two-term job to try and deal with that. That actually, they are so far outside the fringe. It's quite an achievement.
Well, look, the argument we had, I supported Keir Starmer for leadership. I was part of the broader Corbyn movement. It didn't particularly like my position over Brexit, which was to remain. And I fell out with a lot of people towards the end. But, you know, after we lost in 2019, my position was we can win, we can come back, because there was some extreme factors on the doorstep. And the most extreme one was national security, distrust of Jeremy over that. So I've spent the last 3-4 years trying to remedy that. We thought that Keir, if he did radical social and economic policies combined with the traditional Labour values on crime, security, defence, foreign policy could convince enough people back. That was before COVID, before Ukraine. Things have blown up. I think that's that strategy has delivered. We're not in a 10-year wilderness. We're not sitting here with nobody coming to, as you pointed out, Rachel, there's quite a few people here. It is remarkably corporate, even more than last year.
You've got a tie on, Paul.
I always have a red tie on. I always have a red tie on at Labour Party conference.
Very good.
It's fascinating as well in terms of the sort of fringes being on the outside compared to last week where Nigel Farage dancing with Priti Patel. You can't imagine Jeremy Corbyn dancing with Yvette Cooper.
That's terrifying. Definitely a deep fake, yeah, I don't want to say.
I think you asked us to be a bit more cheerful. I think it is an incredibly cheerful conference, but it's a cheerfulness restrained by two things. One, of course, is this terrible event in Israel, the terrorist attack. But the other one you were referring to earlier in your discussion is, I don't think, it's not like Labour's 20-point lead is a Ming vase that they're trying to carry through for the next year. The economy is a Ming vase. You cannot make the kind of promises we would want to be making when gilt yields are hovering between 4.5%, 5%. That's 200 times the cost of money what it was 2 years ago when in this hall Rachel Reeves promised to borrow and spend 28 billion. Even a lefty like me and a statist I am accepts that the kind of statements you can make in a period of very high fiscal risk have to be carefully changed. Calibrated.
Let's go back then to the what's been happening in Israel and the left's response to it. So this was Jeremy Corbyn. He was in Liverpool yesterday. We didn't attend the conference. He was asked by ITV News if he condemns Hamas. Let's take a listen.
Yesterday I sent out a statement calling for a ceasefire, calling for peace, and calling for an end to the occupation of Palestine, which of course is fundamentally the background to the whole issue. Obviously, all attacks are wrong.
But do you
Thank you. I think I've made
Hamas.
My point. I think I've made my point. Very clearly.
You quite made the point.
Wait a minute. What the man is saying is exactly right.
The thing I don't understand, Patrick, about Jeremy Corbyn is his own worst enemy sometimes. You know, when he dug in on anti-Semitism, he just couldn't seem to notice that people were so angry with him. And similarly on this, just condemn Hamas.
Well, look, Jeremy isn't condemning Hamas because that's not how he reads the conflict in Israel, one. And two, it's a temperamental question. When Gabriel Pogrin and I wrote our book on this period, on the fall of Corbynism, left out, the thing that everybody who was close to Jeremy during that period told us was he is incredibly stubborn and wedded to his self-definition as an anti-imperialist, anti-racist. So if you tell him something that threatens that self-definition, his answer isn't introspection or self-reflection, critical self-reflection. It is to double down and sort of luxuriate in his own righteousness. And you hear that there. You hear the resentment that anyone could be questioning that.
I think I listened to that several times over. And, you know, Jeremy's not just an MP for Islington North. He's a privy councillor of this country for Her Majesty the Queen. And if I were in that position and asked that question, you would say, we condemn Hamas fundamentally and thoroughly for their terrorist attack. You would say, as David Lammy said yesterday, that within international law, Israel has the right to go and find the perpetrators, bring them to justice, to rescue the hostages. Whatever the rights and wrongs of the occupation of the West Bank and the multi-decade oppression of Palestinian people, which is true, we can't lose sight of, you cannot say because the one exists, the other one is in some way justified or incapable of being addressed with concreteness, because Jeremy's words there are all attacks are wrong. It's all attacks, not just I condemn all attacks, but all attacks are morally wrong. Well, I know that large parts of the left don't think that all military action is morally wrong. I don't think it. I think if Ukraine attacks Moscow, that's right, right now, under these circumstances. So he's hiding, I think, a real position behind words that make no sense, and it dismays me because he's still a member of the Labour Party, even if he's not a Labour MP. It's a good job he's not a Labour MP, because I can't see the leadership in the PLP standing for this kind of equivocation much longer. I certainly...
And we've seen pretty strong condemnation from Keir Starmer, from Rachel Reeves this morning as well, Rachel, because they know that this is a risk for them. If it brings back up in people's minds, as Paul was saying, Jeremy Corbyn's attitude to national security, to our allies, that, you know, they want to make sure that that is very much a Jeremy Corbyn thing and it doesn't become a Labour Party thing.
Yeah, it's a risk, but it's also an opportunity because a leader has to define themselves against something as well as for something. And if Keir Starmer can define himself against Jeremy Corbyn, then that is an entirely good thing because the voters utterly and completely rejected Jeremy Corbyn and all his ideas, particularly, as Paul says, on national security. You know, that's his prism and he can't see his own flaws or his own shortcomings because he believes, as Patrick says, in his own righteousness. He's a kind of moral superiority which blinds him to the truth.
Patrick, just explain what's going on with Labour MP Epsana Begum, who posed with the Palestinian Solidarity campaign. She's been condemned by lots of people, but she hasn't been suspended by Keir Starmer. What's the calculation, do you think?
Well, I asked this question of a very senior aide to Keir Starmer on Saturday night, hours after Epsana Begum had been photographed at the Palestine Solidarity Campaign stand in this very hall. It was after the attack had been launched, and the reply I got was words to the effect of, look, the Palestine Solidarity Campaign is a legitimate, in their words, middle-of-the-road organisation who we've given a stall to here, so you can't, and we're, as a party, in favour of a two-state solution, so you can't really say it's a prima facie offence to be suspended.
Yeah, you can't have a trade stand here and then
say, well, you know, by that logic, they'd have to keep the PSC out. Maybe they will. Paul, I don't know, like, Paul, do you think the campaign group, the Socialist campaign group of Labour MPs, do you think they are disciplined enough and wise enough to get through this war, this conflict, this conference, without doing anything that gives Keir Starmer a pretext to suspend them?
They're not even united on the fundamental issues. On Ukraine, there's a few people who've been very pro-Russia or Russia-friendly. That Socialist campaign group barely functions. The issue with Absalom, remember, there is a party in her constituency won the council election that has a much harder line position than the one she expressed. So The background to this is not a bunch of crazy ideas out there on the left. The background is that large numbers of Muslims in British communities are worried about what is happening, not just to Palestinians in general, but in the Al-Aqsa Mosque situation in Jerusalem. And when I think you've heard Labour people be very clear on condemnation of Hamas, and very clear, you know, I've reported from Gaza, and I am churned up by what I'm seeing to my Israeli left-wing friends, reporting on the hour every hour, new person we know who's dead. We've got to remove the emotion from this situation because there are communities out there that are feeling very emotional on both sides about this.
OH Sylvester and Patrick McGuire, then of course you can read them both in The Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/Times Redbox. Up next, I drink cocktails with Angela Rayner and Wes Streeting.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
You're listening to the Red Box Podcast. Now, a year ago, I sat down with Angela Rayner. We discussed a whole load of things going up against the then Deputy Prime Minister Therese Coffey. And she suggested that maybe she would swap doing PMQs for doing shots.
Instead of PMQs,
drunk PMQs,
shots. Jaeger bombs.
Yeah.
I can do a Jaeger bomb. You know, I can do a Sambuca, any flavour. There's another one called a Slippery. I'm not going to mention
nipple.
The rest
you can
of
say
it.
Nipple.
It's just tacky, isn't it? But they're
well,
nice.
I've said it now.
They're quite tasty.
That's what you like.
I can talk to you now about cocktails.
Okay. Angela. Well, you know my cocktail.
Well, this time last year, you told me you loved a Slippery Nipple, but you're drinking a espresso martini.
Yeah, because they haven't got venom. Look, we've got the Shadow Health Secretary, soon to be Health Secretary, hopefully, here with us. So, alcohol in moderation.
Yes, I'm here to observe proceedings, make sure that people...
You've got a clipboard and you're writing down everything that everyone's drinking.
I am clutching here in my hand a coffee.
Yeah. Is it espresso martini?
No, it's a coffee, for the benefit of the tape. It's a coffee. And yes, it's everything's going well here. It's nice to see the spectator here at the Labour Party conference. That says something about
of all the straws in the wind. It's quite something. The spectator, the Bible of the Tory Party, are having a party.
Look, I'm just upset that they haven't put venom on the menu.
What is venom?
Venom is a great drink. So when I do it for the masses. I don't do it for small quantities. Just to qualify that before I say it.
Where is this going,
Ash? It's a litre of Absolute Vodka.
Right.
A litre of Southern Comfort.
Yeah.
About 10 bottles of Blue Wicked.
Yeah.
And a litre of Orange Juice. It's really good. And I promise you, whoever comes to your party will have a great night.
I mean, that's more lethal than Dawn Butler's rum punch at Jamaica night.
Where does that fit on your public health plan?
Everything in moderation, Matt. If people take a small sip of Angela's venom, that is acceptable.
Can I just say, it's not my venom.
No.
I discovered it. I didn't create it.
Do you vape?
Because I used to smoke, and smoking is bad for your health, I vape, but I'm going to give up vaping because
Wes is coming for you.
No. I've got... Angela's absolutely right. For a smoker like Angela, to switch on to vaping is better than smoking. And as a smoking cessation tool, fantastic. Where Angela and I are furious is that a generation of kids have been addicted to nicotine by vapes that are marketed, packaged and flavoured to appeal to kids. And that's a bloody disgrace. And the warning that we have given to the vaping industry this week is that unless you clean up your act, a Labour government will come down on you like a ton of bricks.
And you know, vaping, it gives you all the benefits without any of the negatives. So actually, I think vaping is quite addictive. But if you're on cigarettes, vaping is good to get off the cigarettes. But you have to then move on to the next phase because vaping's not good and neither is smoking. So if you're a young person, don't vape, don't smoke, because your lungs are great and you don't know what you're putting yourself in for.
And the message this week is, you know, where Labour leads, the Conservatives follow. We were clear about the fact that we were going to clamp down on vaping. Yeah. The Conservatives decided they would step up. And we were also clear that the best thing we could do for this generation of kids is to stop them smoking in the first place. And what did Rishi Sunak announce last week at Conservative Conference? A Labour proposal, a New Zealand Labour proposal, as well as a UK Labour proposal, to phase out smoking for kids altogether. And the rare bit of good news for poor old Rishi, who had to promise a free vote because he's scared of Liz Truss, is that he doesn't need the cranks, the crackpots and the conspiracy theorists of the Conservative Party. Labour will deliver the votes he needs to deliver that smoking ban for children. And that means that a generation of young people are even less likely to smoke than they are to vote Conservative.
And have you kicked the habit of those enormous coffees you had the last time you came in?
I think you'll find last time I came in, it was a venti hot chocolate with whipped cream, Matt. I'd had a hard time.
It looked delicious.
I'd had a hard time, but I have kicked the hot chocolate habit, and I've gone on to coffee.
Angela's trying to leave. What song should Keir come on to on Wednesday? On Tuesday? Things can only get better?
No, that was done before.
Okay.
Keir's a new, different, politician. So I think, you know, Keir, he's a Blondie fan.
Is he?
He's a Blondie fan. So I think... he should do something
from Blondie.
Something from Blondie.
Okay.
Something uplifting. Like, we've all had
one
such
way or another.
We've had such a difficult time over the last couple of years. We need something uplifting.
Lovely.
Like, not not something that is about like, oh, we can't deliver it, but actually something that's like, yeah, you're going to do that and you're going to make my life better. Wow. That's all we need.
Go and have your vape. Wes, what should it come on stage soon?
I actually think it's, you know, it's a shame the Mirror Party is the night
after
Keir's speech, because he could have come on to a recording of me singing a duet with another prominent Labour politician.
What are you going to sing?
Something from Greece.
Oh, God. God alive. What, Summer Loving?
Well, there are two opportunities. It's either Summer Loving or You're the One That I Want.
Yeah.
It's one of those two. I'm not telling you who my karaoke partner is.
Oh, go on, who is it?
We're ready, we're rehearsing. No, it's a big name.
Is it a big name?
Big name.
A big Labour name?
Big Labour name.
Peter Mandelson.
Can you imagine Peter Mandelson doing karaoke?
You singing You're the One That I Want to Peter Mandelson is the thing that I need in my life.
Right, I'm sorry, Matt, you're not getting that.
Wes, have a lovely... When are you on?
Wednesday morning.
Wednesday morning.
Where we will be setting out Labour's plans to reform the NHS, get it back on its feet and fit for the future.
Wes, cheers to your espresso martini.
And here's to the return of the Spectator. And hopefully, if we work hard and earn people's trust and support, let's hope that we will see the return of a Labour government. But we're going to have to work hard to earn people's trust. And
That's enough.
Angela Rayner and Wes Treated there. I'm not sure anyone else has got content like that. Right, finally on the podcast, we thought we'd take a look back at 3 years of our focus groups and how normal voters have changed the way they think about Keir Starmer.
This is Keir Starmer's fourth party conference as Labour leader. So we thought we'd take a trip down memory lane. I'm joined by From Jail partner Scarlett McGuire. Scarlett, good to see you.
Good to see you.
So let's just rewind the clock all the way back to October 2020. So at that point, Keir Starmer had been Labour leader for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. This is what the focus group then had to say about Keir Starmer.
To be honest, I haven't really been following him.
Obviously, he's very new into the job, but he hasn't really challenged the government very much by bringing in alternative suggestions.
I haven't really listened to him.
I get quite a good vibe from him, but I agree, he doesn't challenge enough. I think Angela Rayner does a better job at doing that.
I don't really know much about him, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know too much about him, but I would say he seems like quite a viable opponent.
I don't know much about him at all.
I think he's tried to raise conflict in the last week or so where conflict shouldn't really exist.
Well, from what I've seen of him, to be fair, it doesn't matter what was said and done, he's going to find the opposite.
So we should go, you know, rewinding back to October 2020, we were sort of heading back into lockdown again. There's a lot, you know, a lot of that was part of it. It's fair that 6 months in, people didn't know much about him.
Yeah, I mean, I think they definitely didn't. And I think, as you say, I think the timing is quite crucial because he became leader of the opposition. We basically instantly went to lockdown. And Labour, throughout that, were being, I mean, I think the public were on board with this, were being very supportive of the government. And so actually, like, you know, there wasn't a big opportunity for him to come and criticise an awful lot. So I think, yeah, I think that's just a reminder of how little he was known then.
So let's then jump to October 2021. This is what the focus group then thought about Keir Starmer.
I dislike Keir Starmer. He uses his law background to try and bamboozle Morris. And anything that has gone wrong, he's very, very quick to say, well, I would have done this or I would have done that.
Whether it's fake news or not, Keir Starmer is actually remembered for the one that let Jimmy Savile get away. He was in charge of the CPS at the time. And a lot of people don't know who he is. He's not made that impression.
I feel that the Labour Party were so behind after Jeremy Corbyn. We needed this big, strong character, and there wasn't one.
He's an absolute tool. I wouldn't trust a word that comes out of his mouth.
He's not a likeable character, and I don't like the fact that he just kind of... Well, hindsight's a wonderful thing, and anyone could be in a good job if they knew everything. If they could predict the future, then obviously everyone would get the right answers.
I would struggle to recognise a picture of him.
A completely wrong man for the job.
He looks a bit of a weirdo.
I mean, that was pretty brutal. Listening back to that, I do remember that. I mean, he'd be pleased at being described as a tool, given that, as we all know, his father was a tool maker. he'd probably take that as a compliment. But there was also the Captain Hindsight thing, which is what essentially Boris Johnson was hammering him with at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we can see is there were some Boris Johnson attack lines really landing there for Keir Starmer. And actually, you know, October 2021, Boris was riding very high. I remember, you know, people saying 10 more years of Boris Johnson or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And I think we can see that Keir Starmer was really suffering by comparison at that point.
And there was that, and people got very cross with the focus groups. The willingness of the general public to give the benefit of the doubt to Boris Johnson. They could see the pandemic was a unexpected, once-in-a-lifetime event, and the sense that he was doing his best and no one would have known what to do really persisted long after Twitter had given up.
No, absolutely, and I think this is a really good reminder because it just shows, again, just how harshly they're then, because I think, you know, it's a relationship where if they view the Prime Minister well, they're more likely to view the Leader of the Opposition badly, and I think we're seeing that at the moment. We saw it last year, particularly, we can come to this with Truss and Starmer, but I think what is quite interesting here is this pre-party Gate. So it's before the public sort of opinions about Boris Johnson were completely shattered.
Okay, but let's jump ahead then to this time last year. Obviously, we're in the midst of Liz Truss. I'm not sure. I think we did do a Liz Truss focus group. I think it might have been after she just became Prime Minister. So that's literally a couple of days later. So that was just the context. She was not really unpopular at that point. This is what the focus group said about Keir Starmer a year ago.
Never heard of him.
I'm a little bit wishy-washy. I haven't got anything majorly negative to say, but I just don't think he inspires a great deal of confidence. I wouldn't think, I'd definitely vote for him as a person.
I'm a bit on the fence with him. Like I say, the first thing I've seen of this Keir Starmer is when he's having a go at him in Parliament, and then it obviously come out about him going out as well and being out when obviously everyone's supposed to be on lockdown and staying in. I think the only thing I'll find of him is he has the knack to own up to it and apologise.
He does seem a bit more, ever so slightly, in tune with what's going on.
I don't believe he's got a clear direction at the moment. He's okay to counter whatever the Conservatives are doing, but he's not really putting anything down for what he wants to do.
I find him a bit of a people pleaser, and but he's likable.
I don't trust him, say the truth.
Really interesting. I mean, clearly, it's sort of mixed bag there, but the mood is changing.
Mood is completely changing. He's still struggling with cut through. You get the inevitable, I don't know who he is.
Yeah.
Which still get, but anyway. But he is changing. And actually, if you go just on data, not on focus groups, this was about the period where he was technically his most popular. He was in sort of positive ratings. He's now slipping back down to negative, still better than Sunak. But it's been a sort of, actually, in terms of favourability, it's been a story of slight decline over the last year. So here, again, in contrast to Truss, people were thinking maybe he's all right.
And then in this month's focus group, we had a group of people who voted Conservative at the last election and now say they're going to vote Labour. So they have switched. And we were trying to sort of get under the bonnet of, it looks great, 20-point lead in the polls, but how baked in is it? Is it a positive Labour vote or a negative turning away from the Tories? So this is what the focus group this month said about Keir Starmer.
Vague. The first word was actually watery, but I thought that's quite rude, so I've said change it to vague.
For me, it's a fresh start.
I can't think of a word, really, because I just don't know anything about the chap at all.
I'll be really honest, I don't know who he is.
I guess the word would be unsure.
I don't want to call him a liar, but some people do, you know, like going back on policies.
I would say probably typical politician, because when they're trying to get into power, all they do is slander the other party to try and make themselves look better.
Vague, watery. I mean, we've had that for a long time. But what's striking is these are self-identifying Labour voters. They are the people currently giving Keir Starmer a 20-point lead. They don't sound very enthusiastic about it, Scarlett.
No, they absolutely don't. And this is something we've been hearing in focus groups, you know, for the last few months. But I feel like everyone is actually sort of catching up with it a bit more. I mean, they should have just been listening to more of ours, clearly. But people are catching up with it a bit more. The voters are really hesitant. Even the ones that say they're going to vote for him. I think, you know, it's become a bit of a cliche to say it now, but people are just so fed up with the Conservatives. They'll basically give anyone a go. Actually, most of them are deciding they just don't know how they vote, or they won't vote at all at the moment. Not if you put them all together, more than they say they're going to Labour. But even the Labour ones aren't very enthusiastic.
And the thing is, the same as a pit, whenever anyone talks about private polling or private focus groups, there's no way that Number 10 or the Labour Party are getting different answers. And in fact, you know, I bumped into Deborah Matteson last night. She used to come on the show, because she used to do, you know, she used to be Gordon Brown's pollster. She used to come on the show and do focus groups for us. She now does it for Keir Starmer. She'll be hearing exactly the same stuff. So what do you think they should be doing to try and turn that sort of wishy-washy, always a bit, but I might vote for him anyway. I'm really looking forward to voting for Keir Starmer.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll be very aware of this, but they're walking a very difficult tightrope, aren't they? Because on the one hand, they're hearing all of this from focus groups, which we don't know what he stands for, what's he going to do. He might just be like everyone else anyway, you know, sort of tarred with the same brush that all of those politicians, you know, they just think they're lying to try and get into power. However, he's also got to be careful because voters have quite deeply held and residual anxieties about how Labour will handle things like the economy and immigration. And actually, just because they think the Conservatives are handling them so much worse at the moment doesn't mean they might be triggered by something that Labour say they're going to do. Maybe saw that a little bit with that EU sort of small boats announcement that he did, saw him treading on some like slightly more difficult water there. But it's tricky, but they're going to have to do something because actually, at the moment, people are just not, they can't bank on these people, I don't think.
And we should remember that in 2001 and 2005, Tony Blair was behind in the polls before then, maybe not 2001, I'm not sure William Hague ever got ahead of the polls, but certainly in 2005. But in the white heat of an election campaign, polls narrow. It's a test of the mettle, and the Tories are ruthless, as we saw last week. If they can't find something to attack Labour for, they'll make it up.
Yeah.
And it becomes, you know, if that 20-point lead very easily becomes a 10-point lead, becomes a 5-point lead, becomes hung parliament.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, you'd be very silly to rule that out. The only thing I would say is that just quite how public opinion has turned towards the Conservatives. So, I mean, you know, we've seen this in focus groups, see this in focus groups everywhere. But people are just so fed up and they'll say, well, I'm going to vote for anything if it means getting this lot out. And their faith, I think it's not even so much a dislike. They don't even dislike Rishi Sunak, but they just don't think they're going to be able to get anything done at all. And, you know, I feel like that's, most people feel like it's in such a desperate state that they'll roll the dice anyway.
And how have you found it? I mean, what's the mood is a slightly sort of cliche question, party covers, but it's so different to last week.
Yeah, it feels incredibly different. I mean, I thought last week wasn't quite as bad as I was expecting, but I just think that's because my expectations were, you know, sort of rock bottom. But it was fine. But this week, it just feels so much more upbeat. It's so much more lively. There are more people around, many more MPs as well. I barely saw any MPs last week. And it does feel like there's much more of a buzz about the place.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Well, we'll see. We'll see how it pans out. Yeah. Good to see you, Scarlett Maguire there.
And that's all we've got time for on today's episode of the podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. But for now, from me, Matt Chorley, it's goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.